So we have been practicing for one day. It is possible that some people may wonder why to practice meditation. I may say we may ask this question very often and try deeply to understand why. But tonight I want to give a little bit of the context in order for us to understand a little bit better what is the point of our meditation, how it works. It seems that it is not so much difficult to find answers. What is most important is to find the proper questions. Questions which are meaningful, questions dealing with that which is essential. If you were hit by a car accident and brought to the hospital, and the doctor would start to ask you questions, what is the name of your father, where did he go to school, what about your mother and yourself, where did you go to school, who were your teachers, you may wonder if those questions are really the proper question at this time. Respect to the urgency of the situation, it seems that those question will not be relevant. At the time of the Buddha, some disciples also used to come to the Buddha and ask questions. Questions about the universe, if it had a limit or not, if the universe was eternal or not, asking if the Buddha would still exist after his death or not. The Buddha thought those questions were meaningless. Those questions were not helpful. And he said that he was not interested in inquiring in those topics. He was not interested in answering those questions. I am teaching suffering, the cause of suffering, cessation of suffering, and the path leading to the cessation of suffering. And I am not teaching about the universe, if it is limited or not limited. And he asked the monks and nuns, and he said, please remember what I am teaching, and remember also what I am not teaching. Why am I teaching suffering, the origin of suffering, the cessation, and the path leading to cessation? He said, because that is leading to emancipation, that is leading to freedom. Why am I not teaching about the universe, if it is limited or not limited? And because that does not lead to emancipation, that does not lead to freedom. That's why I'm not teaching it. And all the sutra, all the teaching that the Buddha gave during the 40 years that he was teaching, are mainly explanation about some aspect of those Four Noble Truths, sometimes stating the Four Noble Truths again, and sometimes giving light to one or the other aspect of those Four Noble Truths. There is the essential of the Buddha's teaching. Although suffering, the cause and the end of suffering, of course, is nothing that is specific to the Buddhist tradition, and we may understand that is a problem that may concern all sentient beings. Suffering, the origin, and the cessation of suffering. The way that the Buddha stated suffering is very clear. It is difficult to doubt about it. He said birth, sickness, old age, and death is suffering. It would be difficult to say that it is only the product of his own imagination. Starting his teaching by speaking about birth, sickness, old age, and death is a very interesting aspect in the Buddha's attitude. 2,500 years ago, by the Ganges, at the time of the Buddha, there were many teachers, many people teaching different doctrines. Some were very speculative, reading the Vedas and trying to speak about very abstract matters. some other way extreme in mortification, in inflicting pain to the body. But it seems that the Buddha did not let himself draw to abstract thinking, to the way that the Veda were read at this time. What he seemed that he did, he looked around to see why he was living, and also he looked within to understand his own situation, the condition of any human being. And what he saw, looking at the situation of any human being, that was birth, sickness, old age and death. That's just what he observed. Obviously he's not the only one observing that. But then what is the next step? When one has seen clearly the situation of human being as a very fragile, a very weak situation, a situation there is no certainty, there is no true protection, a situation in a sense which is very dramatic. However we may live our life, the outcome is certain for all of us, is old age if we make it so far, and death. So for some thinker, some philosopher, it was a reason to despair, it was a reason to speak about human nature as being something very wicked, very poor. The Buddha, having seen that, he did not stop there. He tried to understand why is it that we're in such a situation? This situation of fragility, this situation of being completely conditioned by sickness, old age and death. He wondered, is that the last word about our situation? There was no resignation, on the contrary, there was a very strong determination to find out deeply, is it really, in essence, our true situation? Is it that we are limited to that situation of birth, sickness, old age and death? Or is there anything more to our situation? Is there anything more to our condition? To try to understand how that come about, the suffering of old age and death, how that come about. Inquiring into the origin, the cause of suffering, he discovered that it is due to grasping and attachment that we were subjected to old age and death. Because there is attachment and grasping, that the reason why we are living in such a poor situation, such a poor condition. Inquiring into the different aspects of attachment, he explained that we have different types of attachment. There is attachment to sense pleasure, trying to see nice things, to taste nice things, to touch nice things. And then here, that because we were attached to that, we were grasping to those experiences, always trying to secure more and more sense experiences, pleasing sense experiences. This attachment, this grasping, was conditioning us and keeping us in this situation of being submitted to old age and death. The first type, sense pleasure. The second type of attachment, he saw that is attachment to opinion and views. So we all have point of views about nearly everything. And when we have point of views, concept, preconception about the world, about anything, this is a limitation. Because we see the world, ourselves, through those preconceptions, because we are grasping at our own point of view. That is a limitation which is binding us in this wheel of suffering because of attachment to point of view and to preconception. a certain type of attachment. It described as being attached to rites and rituals, or if you like, to wishful thinking. If we imagine why did he mention rites and rituals at his time, in the Vedas, in many Indian texts, one was expecting very much from rituals, and the rituals were supposed to really bring fortunes. If you would do a proper ritual, then you will be rich. And there were so many of those rites and rituals which were supposed to bring a proper result. And that was he was questioning, that if one invests much of one's own activity in doing some magical rites, hoping with those rites to ripen a fruit that one is wishing for, that was also a way of grasping and a way to mislead oneself and to be stuck in the wheel of suffering. Rites and rituals, wishful thinking. For that, more subtle, it is the attachment and grasping to the notion of self. Because there is grasping to the notion of self, we are stuck in this wheel of suffering. So it is not that anyone is keeping us there. There is no agents who suddenly decide that we should be punished and stay in this wheel of suffering and deciding for us, compelling us to stay in this wheel of suffering. It is only ourselves, through our attachment and grasping, it is only we who are keeping ourselves in the wheel of suffering. The Indian text gives an example. It is a trap to catch monkeys. They said in India at this time, when they wanted to catch monkeys, they would make a small box with a very small opening, just that the hand of the monkey could go in, and inside they will put a banana or some fruit. So the monkey would come and put his hand inside, grasp the fruit and try to take the hand out, but of course he could not anymore because the hand was much bigger to take it out. So even when the hunter were coming, the monkey did not understand that he had to let go of what he was grasping in order to escape. So in the same way, there is no one putting us in the wheel of suffering but ourselves. Through our grasping and attachment, we are keeping ourselves in this poor situation, bound to suffer. Because we are grasping and attached to the notion of self, this is the deepest and the strongest grasping. Because of that, then we may, because of this attachment to the notion of self and the strong belief in the notion of self, in order to satisfy this self, then we may cling to sense pleasure, then we cling to opinions and view, because those opinions and view, they are mine, therefore they relate to a sense of self in the same sense pleasure, they also we cling to them because we relate to I, to me, so that's why we cling to sense pleasure, because we have this preconception, this strong notion of self. So that is really this way that we are holding to this banana, and we cannot let go of it in order to escape from this wheel of suffering. Nobody else is responsible for this situation. So the Buddha described first our state, nothing so special about it, but just not accepting it is not. He refused to just surrender to this possibility of being our own nature to suffer. Inquire, discover the situation which was keeping us in the situation of suffering. The origin has been grasping, has been attachment. Then you wonder, is it possible to go beyond this attachment? Is it possible to finally find state, to find an experience which will be free of suffering because it will be free of grasping and attachment? If we were to let go of grasping, let go of attachment, then there will be no more suffering. And that will be the truth, the third truth, the truth of the cessation of suffering, which is called nirvana. If attachment and grasping cease, there is no more suffering. We are not anymore caught in this wheel of suffering. There are different ways to understand how those truths are linked together. One traditional way to understand the origin with respect to suffering is that if we are now in this situation, it is because of past actions. Because of past actions, we were born in this life, in this country, or whatever country we were born, in this situation, because of past actions. So any characteristic of our situation is depending on our past actions. So we may understand the way that the origin of suffering is linked with the truth of suffering. In a way of extending over time, because of past attachment, I am now in a conditioned situation. Because of past habituation, I am now in a conditioned situation. And we find plenty of examples, plenty of description of this way of understanding the link between the origin and suffering. But I would like to to explore it in a slightly different way with you tonight. When the Buddha said to his disciples, the monks and nuns, he said, I am teaching the Four Noble Truths because it leads to emancipation and freedom. He said, here and now. He did not say in future lives. So the understanding, realization of the Four Noble Truths may lead to freedom here and now. Freedom from what? Freedom from what he described as being suffering, birth, sickness, old age, and death. So for him, the understanding, leading necessarily to ungrasping, will bring the freedom right now. And it is obvious that right now, what does it mean now for all of us to be free of birth, old age, and death? What does it mean for each one of us? How would that be possible? Is it not strange that someone, even the Buddha, could pretend that we could be free of old age and death right now? It seems that being linked with this body in the situation where we are, obviously we are getting old, whether that is we are now, but anyway, we are exactly the same speed. One day, every day, we are getting older. And that will end by death. So what could it mean when the Buddha said to be free of old age and death right now? When he speaks about the truth of the origin of suffering as being grasping and attachment, that is the origin of suffering. If we were not to understand it at this time as because of attachment and grasping, I did past action which led me to what I am now, but if we try to understand that in each instant, right now, any situation is painful because of attachment and grasping. So it doesn't mean that we are going to get rid of the situations, but what we are going to get rid or free from is to experience it as suffering. Not that suddenly we will not get old, not suddenly that we will not die, but through non-grasping, through the lack of attachment, that will not be experienced as suffering. Sickness, old age, and death will not be experienced as suffering. That's where the freedom will be. Not because our body is going to be pure, free from old age and death, but because the way that we will be experiencing ourselves, our body, will be free. Because we are not cultivating, we are not falling anymore into the truth of the origin of suffering, grasping and attachment. Which means that at any instant, if a situation is experienced as being painful, it is always due to attachment and grasping right now. We don't need to look for the past, which anyway, what can we do about the past? But right now, we can question, if now it is painful, whatever my situation is, it is because there is grasping and attachment. So I have everything in hand now to experience something as freedom or as bondage, as suffering or as freedom. Trying to undo the past, which is completely impossible. So we may understand why the Buddha said then, I am teaching freedom from the truth of suffering. Right now, here and now. Because he is teaching the path, which is the Fourth Noble Truth, the path leading to the cessation of grasping and attachment. And when that is accomplished, cessation of grasping, cessation of attachment, there is freedom from suffering. Again, it doesn't mean that our body disappears, doesn't mean that it does not become old. But it means that we also don't grasp at it, we don't identify with it as being I, me, mine. And we don't identify, when you don't grasp at the body, as a life, as being I, me, mine, we are not conditioned by what's happening to the body. When we identify or take the body as I, me, we are placing ourselves, we are placing our interest in something which is so fragile, we are placing ourselves in a loser by identifying with the body. There is no way that we cannot lose, because the body is going to disappear at the end of life. I'll take another example, maybe not relevant in this situation, but let's imagine that you like sport and then you play a football game in Tel Aviv. Now you choose your team. So if you choose and you really identify with one team, if you choose the weak team, you are going to lose and you are going to be disappointed. So it's very fascinating in sport to see with sport fans how they can really identify with one team or the other one. And when the team lose, I mean, they've lost. Only through the power of identification. Yeah, it lasts only usually the time of the game or whatever. When we identify with the body in the same similar way, we identify with something which is very fragile. And then what is happening to the body then is happening to us, getting old and dying. So that is due to attachment, to grasping to the body as being self. If we don't grasp at the body, our life as being self, then we will be free from old age and death. We also will be free from birth, because this body which took birth, not identifying with that, then we are not conditioned by birth, old age and death. Through the quality of non-grasping, through the quality of non-attachment, through the quality of non-identification. So we may understand how the truth of the origin of suffering is at stake at every instant. We are cultivating the condition of our suffering every instant that we are grasping, that we are identifying. At every instant, we have the freedom not to grasp, not to identify. Obviously, the patterns of habituation are very strong, and it's not only a matter of deciding, I'm not going to identify. Confusion is quite strong, so habitual patterns may arise again, but still there is the possibility of this freedom every instant. Of course, to speak about identification and the notion of self, we need much more elaborated explanation. I don't want to go too deep into that aspect of the problem now. We may understand and say, yes, that's fine, so let's not grasp, let's not be attached. But how to do that? Since habitual patterns are so strong, that is not a matter of deciding, yes, I'm not going to be attached anymore to sense pleasure, I will not identify with the body or with any emotions. Again, it's not a matter of decision. We have to be aware and start to be mindful of the habitual patterns that come and push us again and again to identify and to grasp. And in order to slowly be able not to identify, in order to be able not to be attached anymore, the Buddha taught the Fourth Noble Truth, the truth of the path. It's through the cultivation of the path that slowly we may stop to grasp at all the experiences and the sense of self, and finally not cultivating the second truth, the truth of the origin of suffering, and be free. So what is it that we need to practice? What is it that the Buddha taught in the truth of the path? Can be described in many ways. One simple way, which is usually described in India or in the monasteries, like we can see in the Tibetan monasteries, is a wheel, a huge wheel that is a symbol of the teaching of the Buddha. And you have three parts. You have the outer part, the brim, you have the spokes, and you have the center part. And those three parts are the symbol of the aspect of the teaching of the Buddha. The brim, the outer part, is the morality. The spokes are wisdom, and the center part is concentration. So those three aspects are the aspect of the path that need to be cultivated in order to not to grasp anymore and to be free. With respect to the first one, morality, morality is a way to behave by body, speech and mind in a proper way. And proper way means one or to other in a way that does not bring more confusion to oneself and to other. So the aspect of the moral attitude is to avoid anything that will bring more confusion and suffering to self and to other. And that is what is keeping the spiritual path together. That's why it is described as the outer part of the wheel. It is a protection, that which protects our practice. In the text it is described like the lack of morality would be to put a very nice drink into a dirty vessel. If you were to have a dirty cup, and even if you put very nice drink inside, then you cannot drink it anymore. Or it is said like a broken vessel. So if you want to drink water and you use a broken cup, the water cannot be kept and will go away. So the spiritual path, if we don't practice morality, will just be wasted, like if we were to put water in a broken vessel. Morality is a very important aspect. It's also the best protection that one may have. And I imagine politicians may have learned that sometimes, that the best protection is the practice of morality. It is like the skill of a samurai and the armor of a samurai. That is morality. It's protecting against any enemies, any attacks. If the samurai is a well-trained samurai and he has his proper armor and sword, then he can really protect himself. But if he is unaware, if he is neglected or drunk, then he cannot protect himself anymore. Then he will be put in a situation where he will suffer and maybe be killed. So in a sense, our spiritual practice is well protected, well guarded with the power of morality. There is a story happening in Japan describing a little bit the importance of morality. It may or may not have anything to do with what I'm speaking about now, but I still will tell you this story. One shogun, those great lord in landlord in Japan, want to send his master of tea ceremony to Kyoto. And the master of tea ceremony were dressed in a way very similar to the samurai. The only difference was that they were not wearing any sword. They were not allowed. But this shogun is worrying about this master of tea ceremony. He's not such a strong man. He's worrying that he may be attacked on the way. And he said, well, take my sword, because nobody will see that you are not a samurai, so nobody will attack you believing you are a samurai. So the master of tea ceremony accept and start to walk over Kyoto, and on the way, unmindfully, is hurting another samurai. So the other samurai immediately draw his sword and want to fight with the master of tea ceremony. And the master just explained that he's not a true samurai, but he's just carrying the sword of his master. And he said, if you want to take my life, take my life, but I have no idea, I don't know how to fight, I'm not a samurai, so if you want to kill me, just kill me. But the samurai, of course, cannot just kill a man who has even not taken his sword out. So he said, okay, I don't believe your story, but we'll meet tonight. You have till tonight to be ready, and tonight we'll fight. You have to come back tonight. The master of tea ceremony goes to the small town where they were nearby, and goes to the martial arts school, goes to the teacher and explains his story, and said, I have to go and fight tonight, and I will be killed because I have no way, I don't know how to fight, how to hold the sword. And the master of martial arts, of course, understands that you cannot train a samurai in an afternoon. And he said, so what were you doing for the shogun? He said, well, I'm a master of tea ceremony. He said, well, then make a tea ceremony for us. So this understanding that maybe the last one is doing so, he's making the tea ceremony, of course, very, he's a master, so he does it the best way he can, and mindful of everything, and preparing the tea, and certainly, I don't know, maybe offering up the cup to the master of martial art. So at the end, the master of martial art said, that's fine, you are ready for tonight, just you will hold the sword the way you are holding the cup. Hold the sword exactly with the same quality of presence that you're holding the teacup, and everything will be fine. So the master of tea ceremony goes in the evening where he has to meet the powerful samurai, and then they start, so he draws his sword and just hold it like he would hold the cup with such a beautiful way of being present there. And then the samurai look at him and just draw down his sword and said, well, I can't fight with you. You don't leave any room for me to attack you. He said, you are a true warrior. So he said, I'm very sorry. I've been very rude with you. And so let's not fight. And he goes away. So we see that by the quality of just being present of this master of tea ceremony, although he had to meet a very powerful samurai, he could just protect himself. So the practice of morality gives this sense of course, it does require being aware and mindful of our behavior in order not to bring confusion to self and other, not to bring suffering to self and other. But that's what is protecting our spiritual path. Not only our spiritual path, but it's certainly also a very deep protection in our daily lives. If our behavior is according to a very clear moral conduct attitude, then there is no way that people can attack us, that people can slander, or people can try to harm us, because our behavior is proper. So that's the aspect of morality. Aspect of concentration, which is the center part of the will. Concentration is a quality of mind that we all know, we all have developed. We need to listen now, I need to speak, we need in our professional life. So we have concentration, but in order to deepen our intimacy with our experience, our intimacy with ourselves, we need a mind which is quieter than what it is usually. In order to do that, we we choose some type of experience that we will just fix our mind on that and let the mind settle in this type of experience, that it may become quieter and quieter. Experiences may be like the flame of a candle, maybe like a disc of color, blue or white or whatever. It may be an image, it may be a breath. By just settling the mind in this experience, disregarding any other type of experience, that may help the mind to become quieter and quieter. Only a mind very quiet can develop the intimacy with the experience, intimacy needed to develop wisdom. It is described in the text, it is like if we were to try to read, if I were to try to read my notes, which anyway I can't, so if now somebody would bring me a candle and there will be a lot of wind, I would not be able to read my notes. Or there will be a fan there, so the candle will flicker, I will not be able to read. So the stability of the flame, that is like the quietening of the mind. When the mind is quiet, then, only then, can we really, really deepen our understanding and the intimacy with our present experience. Many ways to develop concentration or to develop quietness of the mind. The third aspect, which is like the spokes, it is wisdom. We can say here it is developed through the practice of vipassana. And vipassana means a clear seeing. It's made out of two words, of vi and passana. Pass, it means to see, and vi means clearly, to see clearly. And vi also means without concept. The practice of vipassana is the practice, the cultivation of wisdom that leads us to see clearly the truth of our life, the truth of who we are. A seeing which is not based on concept. A seeing which is, seeing it's just a way of speaking, an understanding, a realization which is completely free of conceptualization. In the mystics it is said that if one were to know God through a means, he would know the means, not God. So we say if one were to know the truth through a concept, one would know the concept, not the truth. If one were to realize reality through concept, one would know concept but not reality. The practice of vipassana, the practice of wisdom, is to develop this intimacy with any experience, an intimacy that does not leave room for concept. An intimacy that does not leave room for any judgment, evaluation, but leave the experience in its bare nature and bare quality. And the experience, situation, is experience without concept. No concept at all. At this time, it's free of grasping. When there is no grasping, when we are experiencing each one of our experience at each instant, free of grasping, free of concept, at this time, there is nothing that can bind us. Our jail is made only of concepts. The bars of our jail are the different concepts. When all the concepts collapse because we are not grasping at our experiences through concept, then the conditioning has disappeared. We may understand why in our practice we attempt to be with whatever is at each instant. If we start to try to manipulate, to improve, or to do anything. It means that we are having a concept of improvement. It means that we are seeing the situation, make an evaluation of it, and then hoping for something different. Then we are not in the actuality of the experience. We have withdrawn in the world of evaluation, we have withdrawn in the world of concept, and not experiencing the actuality of our life right now. In our retreat, those three aspects are practiced together. There is morality in the way that there is a set of behavior that we try to respect. Quietening of the mind aspect is that when nothing special is appearing in our field of experience, we just relate to bodily sensations. Or when the walking, we relate to the body sensation, the experience of lifting the foot, moving and touching. That brings the quietness of the mind because we select a field of experience which is quite simple. If you like, not much is exciting about lifting, moving and placing the foot. No excitement. Yet if one can develop quality of presence there, one would see that there is also the potential for freedom in this simple experience of the quality of presence at each instant. So the concentration, the quieting of the mind is developed through coming to the body sensations whenever nothing is happening which is taking or needing our attention. The element of wisdom is developed through not judging, not evaluating, not transforming whatever is appearing. Experiencing fully whatever is arising without any intention to transform, to improve, that leaves a room for intimacy. And we can experience anything with deep intimacy, then wisdom may appear and freedom. So in the setup of our practice, all the aspects are gathered together. That needed to develop at one time concentration and at another time the practice of vipassana. We'll just sit for a few minutes in silence together.